The following is a class on the Bhagavad Gita as it is. Chapter number 7, text number 30. Given by His Grace, Sriman Sankarshan Dasatkikari. Recorded on October 8th, 2010, in Vrindavan, India.
So, tonight we are reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is. We wouldn't read any other edition, wasting our time. This edition is worth every minute of study because it liberates us from this material existence. Chapter 7, text number 30. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Sadibhutadi Daivang Mam. Sadibhutadi Daivang Mam. Sadhi Yagyam Chaye Viru. Sadhi Yagyam Chaye Viru. Prayana Kale Pichamang. Prayana Kale Pichamang. Tevedur Yukta Chetasa. Tevedur Yukta Chetasa. Sadhi Bhutadi Daivang Mang. Sadhi Yang Yang Chaye Viru. Prayana Kale Pichamang. Tevedur Yukta Chetasa. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Those in full consciousness of me, who know me, the Supreme Lord, to be the governing principle of the material manifestation of the demigods and of all methods of sacrifice, can understand and know me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even at the time of death. The purport. Persons acting in Krishna consciousness are never deviated from the path of entirely understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the transcendental association of Krishna consciousness, one can understand how the Supreme Lord is the governing principle of the material manifestation and even of the demigods. Gradually, by such transcendental association, one becomes convinced of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and at the time of death, such a Krishna-conscious person can never forget Krishna. Naturally, he is thus promoted to the planet of the Supreme Lord, Goloka Vrindavan. This seventh chapter particularly explains how one can become a fully Krishna-conscious person. The beginning of Krishna consciousness is the association of persons who are Krishna conscious. Such association is spiritual and puts one directly in touch with the Supreme Lord, and by His grace one can understand Krishna to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. At the same time, one can really understand the constitutional position of the living entity and how the living entity forgets Krishna and becomes entangled in material activities. By gradual development of Krishna consciousness in good association, the living entity can understand that due to forgetfulness of Krishna, he has become conditioned by the laws of material nature. He can also understand that this human form of life is an opportunity to regain Krishna consciousness, and that it should be fully utilized to attain the causeless mercy of the Supreme Lord. Many subjects have been discussed in this chapter: the man in distress, the inquisitive man, the man in want of material necessities, knowledge of Brahman, knowledge of Paramatma, liberation from birth, death, and diseases, and worship of the Supreme Lord. However, he who is actually elevated in Krishna consciousness does not care for the different processes. He simply directly engages himself in the activities of Krishna consciousness and thereby factually attains his constitutional position as an eternal servitor of Lord Krishna. In such a situation, he takes pleasure in hearing and glorifying the Supreme Lord in pure devotional service. He is convinced that by his doing so, all his objectives will be fulfilled. This determined faith is called Dṛḍha Vṛta, and it is the beginning of Bhakti Yoga, or transcendental loving service. That is the verdict of all scriptures. This seventh chapter of the Bhagavad Gita is the substance of that conviction. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports to the seventh chapter of the Srimad Bhagavad Gita in the matter of knowledge of the Absolute. Shri Guru, Shri Jata Balakamala, Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha, Shri Rupa Sagrajata Sagana Raghunatanvita Damsajiva Sadvaita Zavadu Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Param Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha. So, one could inquire, how relevant is this? So, the question is, how many of us in this room will have to face death? Is there anyone in this room who will not face death? Is there anyone in this material existence all the way to the post of Brahma who will not face death? We all must face death. Of course, one might argue, well, I'm not going to die, Prabhu. I'm spirit soul. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the spirit soul passing out of this body. That's what I'm speaking about. That we all must do. Therefore, this verse is 100% relevant, because each and every one of us must face that moment. Of course, it'll be a long time away from now, right? Not going to be any time soon, right? Ahani ahani bhutani ganshantila yamalayam shesha stavram itchami kimmashtayamataha padam. This point is made by Maharaj Yudhisthira when he was asked by Yamaraj, what is the most wonderful thing in this world? Maharaj Yudhisthira, very intelligent, he's a bloody, he is Rajarshi. He is not just a political ruler, he is a great saintly, realized Rajarshi. And he very aptly replied to Yamaraj, at every moment, ahani ahani bhutani, at every moment, thousands and millions of living entities are being dragged to Yamalayam, the abode of Yamaraj. But those who are here, they're thinking, well, not me, at least not for a long time. I have a long time. Not any time soon. You see. And what does Yudhisthira say? Kim mashtaya matahapadam. There is nothing more wonderful than this. The most amazing phenomenon in the whole existence is that everybody is being killed at every minute. People are being dragged like anything, and still everyone's thinking, well, not me. One of our friends died just yesterday or the day before. I was a guest in her home. She fed me prasadam, and now she's left her body. Just out of the blue, boom. So in this way, death comes all of a sudden. You never know. It could hit at any time. So are we prepared for death? Are we actually absorbed in Krishna consciousness? Or are we more absorbed in making our material arrangement? We have to honestly look at our own hearts and see. That doesn't mean we cannot make material arrangements. But those always must be subordinate to making that arrangement so the soul will pass to Goloka at the time of leaving the body. You understand? Material arrangements must always be secondary. Every day I should be arranging how I can go to Goloka, even if I leave right now, today. You see, what is my consciousness? Is it Krishna consciousness, or is it making my arrangements for this material existence consciousness? This is the great challenge of being a devotee. That on the one hand, we have to take care of body. On the other hand, more importantly, we have to take care of the soul. So the soul is the right hand, the body is the left hand. More importantly. So here we get the most poignant, potent, powerful instruction from the Supreme Authority, Krishna, on how we will be able to successfully attain him at the time of death. Those in full consciousness of me. When studying the Shastra, we have to learn to zero in and focus in. You see? Because the more we focus, the more we zero in on these subtle meanings, the deeper we gain understanding. So why the word full consciousness is used? Why full consciousness? Why doesn't it just say those in consciousness of me? Those who are conscious of me. Why is the word given those in full consciousness of me? Well, full means there is such a thing as partial consciousness. You understand? So, we can be Krishna conscious, partially. Or we can be Krishna conscious, fully. And what will the difference be? Srila Prabhupada explains, those who are partially Krishna conscious, Krishna kindly gives them another body in this material world to fulfill their material desires. So, we can be partially Krishna conscious if we want, and it's up to every one of us. Well, how Krishna conscious do I want to be? Fully or partially? See, it's your choice, Prabhu, your choice, Mataji. Do you want to be partially Krishna conscious or fully Krishna conscious? Your choice. No one's forcing. We may be engaged in doing this, doing that, but ultimately it's up to us whether we want to be fully Krishna conscious or partially Krishna conscious. But we get warned herein that if we are not fully Krishna conscious, the same benediction is not there. The same benediction is not there if we are partially Krishna conscious. For the one who are fully Krishna conscious, the time of death, they will understand, yes, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You may say, well, I already know that. What's the big deal? Everyone knows Krishna. We, all the devotees know that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But you know what? We got a little problem going on in the heart. It's called envy. We have a tendency to think, well, I know that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but I'm also the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And we have the tendency. You may say, no, I never think that way. No, we do think that way. Because how many times do I think that I'm the center of enjoyment? You see, that we have to honestly look. How many times, as you look out on the existence of which you're a part, how many times do you measure good and bad based on what pleases you? You see, that means you're trying to play God. You see, we're trying to play God. How many times do we base our judgment of something being praiseworthy or criticizable based on whether it's pleasing to me, whether it's displeasing to me? So that means that tendency is there in the heart, and we want to put ourselves in that position of being the supreme enjoyer. We are envious. So we have to beat down that mad monkey of envy with a stick of transcendental knowledge. You see, we have to beat it down. That mad monkey will get in there and steal our vision. It's like we saw today in Loy Bazaar, some man had his glasses stolen by the monkey. You see? So this monkey mind, it will steal away our vision. If we allow that monkey to go wild, it will take away our transcendental vision of understanding that Krishna is the Supreme Lord. So we have to be firmly fixed in this Krishna consciousness, firmly fixed. Dṛḍha vṛta. So how do we do that? That is described in full detail in the Nectar of Devotion. The first step is Gurashvayam. Rupa Goswami explains the very first step is to take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master. That is the very first step. That means I become humble. Now I put myself under the direction of a bona fide spiritual master who takes control of my life, who tells me what to do and what not to do, who tells me what is right and what is wrong. He is my authority. I follow his authority. You see. We are blessed we have such a supreme authority in Srila Prabhupada. And he has empowered his disciples to also take that position, to train the new devotees who are coming, you see. Because if Prabhupada's everyone's guru, Prabhupada's not here to correct me, you see. When Prabhupada is here, it's not that he has praised and flattered us. He would tell us we were wrong, he would correct us. Don't do that. Do it like this, you see. Don't do that way, you see. We had to be corrected. So we require a living spiritual master who can correct us when we're doing the wrong thing. If I take some departed acharya as my supreme authority, as my initiating guru, as the Ritviks say that we can do, then you can just imagine that whatever you're doing, Prabhupada is pleased with everything you're doing. But was he pleased with everything we did? No, he was not. He said, this is good, this is bad. Don't do that. Don't do like this. He became very disturbed sometimes, extremely angry sometimes at our behavior, and we had to take this us. We had to be corrected. So it's very important that we have an acharya who is present, who can correct us when we get off the track. Another interesting point that comes out, some people say, well, we weren't originally Krishna conscious, but now, you know, we're coming to it. But here Prabhupada directly states he can understand that this human form of life is an opportunity to regain Krishna consciousness. It's very clearly stated that you were Krishna conscious. We were Krishna conscious. We lost it. And it also mentioned in this purport, forgetfulness. If you forgot something, that means you had it, but you forgot about it. Well, I forgot my keys. It means I had the keys, but I forgot where they are. You see. Forgetting something means you previously had that cognizance, but now somehow it's slipped away. You don't have that cognizance. So this idea we were never Krishna conscious is not accepted by the statements here in this purport. According to this purport, we were Krishna conscious, we lost it, we forgot it, and now we have to regain it. So the good news is we have that nature to be Krishna conscious. That is the good news. We don't have to force ourselves to try to be something that we never were in the past, that we don't have a tendency to be. You see? This is the good news. All we have to do is get back to our original pure nature. Some atheist comes up in a very haughty mood and wants to defeat you. What is your philosophy? You can just tell him this. Know who you are and be who you are. That's our philosophy. Know who you are and be who you are. That's our philosophy in a nutshell. What gentleman, even an atheist, would object to knowing who he is? You see? So, just say it. Know who you are and be who you are. You see? We want to know, who am I? Am I this body? Am I this mind? Who am I? What am I? You see? Are my eyes seeing? Or am I seeing through my eyes? Are my ears hearing? Or am I hearing through my ears? You see? Where is the self actually situated? What is the self? You see? The scientists say it is just a conglomeration of chemicals. You're nothing but a chemical reaction. That's all you are. Accept it. You see? We've never seen that chemicals manifest consciousness. We've never seen. Where is the proof in the laboratory of chemicals manifesting consciousness? So this idea that the conscious self is simply a production of chemicals is not at all a scientific idea. It is dogma, actually. It is simply dogma. Hogwash. They're cramming it down our throats. They're accusing us of being dogmatized by our religious leaders, but actually they are the biggest dogmatists of them all. It's cramming all this atheistic dogma down our throats, you see. It's like this Professor Hawkings. I call him He Hawkings. He Hawkings. You see. He brays like an ass with his computer using his cheek. He says that this universe comes out of absolutely nothing. He wants to show that he has now become the greatest scientist in the history of the universe by scientifically proving that everything comes out of nothing. But he hasn't given one shred of scientific evidence to support his theory. Not one shred. You see. You go to the laboratory and show me taking something out of nothing. Or just go to your kitchen. Take an empty pot, put it in the stove, and give me a pot full of popcorn. The end. Can you do it? Can you get a pot of popcorn with no kernels? No, there must be kernels. So these rascals, they want us to believe everything came out of nothing. There's no conscious self, it's just chemicals. I mean, it's not scientific. They don't have one shred of proof to establish these bogus theories. But here we have all the proofs in the world. This Bhagavad Gita is a laboratory manual. It's like when I was a kid in high school. In the chemistry class, they told us, if you take two parts hydrogen and you combine it with one part of oxygen, you will get water. So they didn't ask us to take it on blind faith. They took us to the laboratory and we did it. Each one of us students did it in our little test tubes, following the laboratory manual. H2O equals water. And what did I get in the test tube? Water. I went, wow, this is real. I got it in my test tube. Water. So we are giving you a laboratory manual. And we are saying, okay, now go to the laboratory of consciousness expansion, that is the bhakti laboratory, and you perform these activities, you see, and what will happen? You will get an awakening of consciousness within you. You will get that water of Krishna consciousness. You will experience a higher level of consciousness beyond the sufferings of this material existence. You will find a happiness which does not depend on any material circumstances. Brahma-bhuta prasanatma na sochati na kangshati samaksaveshu bhuteshu madbhaktim lavate param. When one who is thus transcendentally situated at once comes to the level of Brahman, and what happens? Prasanatma, he becomes absolutely blissed out 24 hours a day. Prasanatma. He doesn't lament over anything, he doesn't desire to have anything, he's equally disposed to every living entity. And Krishna says that in that state he achieves, what does he achieve? Mad bhaktim labhate param, pure devotional service unto me. So if you will take this laboratory manual, Bhagavad Gita, and you apply these principles exactly as the lab meant, so don't try three parts hydrogen with one part oxygen or one part hydrogen with one part. Don't invent your own new system thinking, well, I think I know better. No. Mahajano yena gatasya pantha. Follow the pathway of those previous acharyas. Take the exact instructions which have been very carefully handed down. Evam parampara praptam ramamrajarshayo vidu. Take those exact instructions that have been followed for thousands and millions of years, successfully, apply them and you will get the same result. You will get the same result. You will see Krishna in dukkha. You will become a personal associate of that all-beautiful, all-powerful, all-renounced, all-knowledgeable, all-wealthy, and all-famous personality known as Krishna, who controls and owns everything. Everything is emanating from him. That's where it comes from. Not Stephen Hawking's nothing. It comes from Krishna. Someone say, well, why does Krishna exist? What's he doing out there anyway? He doesn't have to answer to you why. He exists because he wants to, that's all. Well, where did he come from? He came from Krishna. That's where he came from. Just like Radha Raman, the self-manifested deity. Krishna is self-manifested. If Krishna came from anywhere, then he came from Krishna, because he says, I'm the origin of everything. So that means Krishna comes from Krishna. He exists for the sheer joy of existence, and to expand the pleasure of existence, he expands from himself innumerable living entities. Now, I mean to say, an infinite number of living entities, he expands from himself for what purpose? To increase his headaches? No. To increase his enjoyment, because the more you can have relationships, you see, the more you enjoy Ras. Krishna is called Rasa Raj. He is the king of Ras. He enjoys unlimited flavors. Just like, for example, I say, well, Prabhu and Mataji, I tell you, we're having a wonderful feast. It's the greatest feast that's ever been served in ISKCON. I mean, there's so much bhakti in it. We put so many hours of hard work and come over here to the Goshala. We're going to give you the most amazing, wonderful feast you ever had. And what do you go over there? It's one big pile of rice. And say, okay, I'm ready for this big, super feast. And here's the rice. Okay, where's the next prep? Well, that's it, Prabhu. It's just rice. But there's a lot of bhakti in the rice. Well, I'm sure there's a lot of bhakti in the rice, but you said it was a feast. What are you talking about? You said it was a feast and all I got is a big pile of rice on my plate. Well, we'll fill you up on the rice. You won't be hungry. But you said it was a feast. So the point is that feast means many varieties of enjoyment. I remember there was a little program there at 26 Second Avenue years ago when ISKCON got it back. And it was a wonderful program. Many of the old timers from the old days came and they told us what it was like at 26 Second Avenue. And Jayadwaita Swami is there telling about the Sunday feast that Prabhupada orchestrated back in the old days. I don't remember the list, but it was, you know, so many types of sweets, so many sabjis. I mean, it was a huge list. And Jayadwaita Swami, very, you know, he's very poetic and everything he says is very poetic. He very poetically said, "You'd be nuts not to join." You'd be nuts not to join. So there were so many varieties, you see. So the more there are varieties, taste means rasa, you see. The more there are varieties of taste, the more the enjoyment increases. Therefore, Rasa Raj, the supreme enjoyer of rasas, in order to enjoy an unlimited variety of tastes, expands from himself an unlimited variety of living entities. And just like in a really well-done feast, every prep is different. Every prep has its own taste, its own texture, its own appearance, its own aroma, you know, everything different. So, therefore, Krishna has endowed each and every one of these infinite number of living entities with his or her own unique characteristics, which are only available in that particular person, that particular jiva soul, so that he can enjoy a particular taste with that particular jiva that he can't enjoy with anyone else. You may say, but how is it possible that there could be so many? No, look at snowflakes. You ever look at snowflakes under the microscope? Are there any two snowflakes that are the same? Each one of them is in a beautiful work of art, actually. An incredible work of art, every snowflake. And each one of them is completely unique. Millions and billions and trillions and quadrillions. How many snowflakes in the history of the existence? You can't even count them, but every single one of those snowflakes is unique. You understand? So every single jiva, just like those snowflakes, is completely unique so that Krishna can really enjoy a feast. Of our loving, the loving relationships. He's feasting on these loving relationships. So what does that mean if we stay in this material existence, trying to enjoy separately from the Lord? It means we're depriving Krishna of a certain taste that he wants to enjoy. Actually, Krishna actually wants to enjoy us. Each one of us. And each one of us has a certain type of enjoyment we can offer the Lord that no one else can offer him. There's no substitute for you, Prabhu. There's no substitute for you, Mataji. You have a certain relationship with Krishna that nobody else can satisfy him in that relationship. Therefore, if we don't go back to Godhead, we are cheating Krishna. And if we cheat Krishna, well, we're cheating ourselves, obviously. Because our enjoyment is based on how much he becomes satisfied. We are not the primary enjoyers, although we're trying like anything to be the primary enjoyers. We're not getting away with it. That's fair. Our enjoyment means to give enjoyment to Krishna. So, let's get with it. Let's follow the great Mahajanas and learn how to please Krishna with our every thought, our every word, our every deed, in all times, all places, and all circumstances. Why should we continue trying to carry on our little charade here in the repetition of birth and death that I am great? Why don't we just humbly admit I'm a failure here? I've tried to enjoy for innumerable millions and billions of lifetimes through 8,400,000 different varieties of so-called enjoyment. Jalajana Valakshani Stavalakshaving Shati Krimaya Rudya Sankhika Pakshinam Dashalakshanam Trinchalakshani Pashavaha Chatur Lakshani Manshaha. Why don't I admit I failed? You know? I've been a failure at least 8,400,000 times to enjoy this material world. But those, actually, Prabhupada explains that we've been here, you can't count, it's innumerable. In other words, We've been through the 8,400,000 species, each one of them millions and billions of times. And we've been complete failures in this. So now it's time to take the wonderful instructions given by Lord Sri Krishna as explained in the most perfect expert way by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Tridandi Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada, the most powerful acharya in the history for delivering the entire human society from the jaws of birth and death. If we will take this wonderful knowledge, you see, and just start applying it, it's not difficult. As Prabhupada told, the first time I met with Prabhupada, San Francisco, 1971, he told us, he said, every time you drink water, if you remember that Krishna is the taste of water, then immediately become Krishna conscious. It is not difficult to be Krishna conscious, simply requires practice. It's all you have to do. Remember Krishna. Is it difficult to remember Krishna? We just have to habituate our mind to being absorbed in Krishna. Always try to bring the mind back to Krishna. Yato yato nishchalati manas chanchalam astaram tatastatam niyamyaitadatmanyagavisham niyat. From wherever that rascal monkey mind wanders due to its flickering in nature, one must certainly bring it back, withdraw it and bring it back under the control of the self. You just got to train yourself. Just like you want to learn to do anything, how to drive a car, you take training, you learn how to do it. You see? So we just have to learn how to drive ourselves back to Godhead, you see, by staying on the road, not going off the road. That's all. If you can drive a car, you can become a pure devotee. Really. If you can drive a car or a motorcycle, you can become a pure devotee. You just got to stay on the road. That's all. Don't get deviated. Look at that beautiful girl over there. No. You see. If you can drive a car, you can become a pure devotee of Krishna. You just got to follow the same methodology you used to stay on that road. You got to just follow, do the same thing when you're driving your consciousness, you see. You got to stay on the road. Look for the warning signs. Follow the speed limit. You know, don't make sure not to run over any this or that. Stay on the road. If you will stay fixed on this road of Krishna consciousness, I guarantee you, in due course of time, you will actually pass through the coverings of the material universe. You'll cross over the Viraja River and you'll find yourself at the end of the roadway at the lotus feet of Lord Sri Krishna, Sri Radha and Krishna. You'll be there. And you'll be so thankful to Prabhupada and all the devotees that helped to get you there. Because, wow, I made it. Somehow or other I made it, even though I had no qualification. It seemed hopeless, but here I am. I'm back in Krishna in the spiritual sky. So anyway, any questions? Now, I'm somewhat deaf, so I don't know who's going to be my hearing aid today. The microphone will make it worse, the echo. Somebody ought to come up and be my hearing aid. Yeah, you sit in and tell me in the ear. Go ahead and say it for everybody else, and he can tell me that.
Hare Krishna. There's a popular story I used to hear quite a bit in the Tucson Temple. And it was about the money, as you mentioned, money, and debt. They would say, always, you must be for being for debt. Don't be like a monkey. They have monkey boxes in India, and in the box they put a banana with a little hole in it. The monkey reaches in and grabs the banana, and then the hunter will put the box there. The monkey sees the hunter coming, and gets very worried because he knows he could die. But I won't let go of the banana. That's what material has to do. You have to let go of the banana.
Who and the monkey? A hunter and a monkey.
Oh, I see.
There is a monkey box. This is a comment basically, it's not a question.
Oh, okay.
It's in a monkey box, they put a banana. So monkey goes inside and then catches hold of the banana, and then that's how he's caught. He's not allowed, he doesn't allow himself to let go of the banana, and that's how the hunter catches the monkey.
Yeah, so we are like monkeys have been captured by the desire to enjoy separately from Krishna. And so we have to realize the foolishness of running after sense gratification and give up that banana. Okay, any questions?
My question is that what is your experience of your having developed taste for chanting Hare Krishna mantra? How to do it and
how to develop taste for chanting Hare Krishna? Now let everyone hear. Yeah.
My question is, over the years you have been chanting Hare Krishna mantra, so what was your experience?
Well, my experience in chanting Hare Krishna is that it is ever increasingly wonderful. The taste that I get now by saying Krishna, the taste I got, back in, when I first said Krishna's name in 1968, is a world of difference. So the thing is that the name has unlimited potential to expand its influence over your consciousness. You just have to be patient. You just got to keep uttering it. You have to follow the regulated principles. And if one will steadily, chant without deviation at least 16 mounds a day by following these principles, the name will become increasingly sweeter. Rupa Goswami has given an understanding of how much nectar there is in the name. Tunte tundavali ritim vitanute tundavali lamdaye karna krodha kadambadi gatayate kunar vyudev jaspriham cheta prangana sangane vijayate sravendriyanam kritim no jane janita kiyanvir amritai krishne divarnadvai. He says, I do not know how much nectar these two syllables, Krishna, have produced. Because when I utter these names, they dance in my mouth. And when those names are dancing in the mouth, oh, it's so sweet. I just want millions and billions of mouths. And when those sound vibrations, Krishna, enter my holes of my ears, it's so much juice there. I want to have millions, billions, trillions, quadrillions of ears. And when those names dance within the courtyard of my heart, my mind becomes absolutely, completely conquered and subdued, and I'm transfixed in a state of transcendental wonderment. So, Rupa Goswami, he is giving us some idea about how much nectar is there in the name. In other words, there's so much nectar that even millions and billions of years can't capture all of it, you see. So we shouldn't think, well, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, let's get these rounds done. We should think, how fortunate I am that Krishna has appeared in the form of his name so that I can connect with him and become completely free of all the sufferings of this material existence, by reawakening my loving relationship with this Supreme Person who has fully invested all of his powers, all of his potencies, indeed his very self is completely present in the name. If you could meet Krishna right now, would you be excited? Krishna's in the next room and he wants you to come in. He wants to meet with you. Krishna himself. Shama Sundar's in there right now. He's got his flute. He's there with Radharani. And they wanted to meet you there in the next room. Can you go in there and offer your obeisances and meet Radha and Krishna? You see? It'd be pretty exciting. You see? Well, Hare Krishna. There they are. Hare Krishna. They're there waiting for you. It's just a matter of your consciousness and your understanding, you see. If you have full comprehension, what is this Hare Krishna? Then when you chant Hare Krishna, you will go, you will enter another room and you will be there directly associating with Radha and Krishna. This, just like Jai Radha Madhava, Prabhupada said, is a window to the spiritual world. This Hare Krishna, it is also a window. And if you will chant it with the proper consciousness, you will go through that window and you will directly meet with Radha and Krishna every time you utter the Hare Krishna mantra. So there's a lot of nectar there, Prabhu. A lot of nectar. And, well, I'm not there yet. What am I supposed to do? I'll never make... No. You just got to patiently follow the process. And you'll get it. If you stick with this process, you will. That mantra will... You will fly on the wings of that Maha Mantra to Goloka Vrindavan. Fly Hare Krishna. It will get you there on time. Okay, I think we're a little over time now, aren't we? Anyone? One last question, if anybody has a question. Everybody satisfied now? Ready to get your ticket on Hare Krishna Airlines and go for the ultimate flight? Hare's taking off. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Rama. Into the friendly skies of Goloka Vrindavan. Jai. Parvyama ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Bhagavad Gita ki jai.
This place, Sankarsana Prabhu ki jai.